You're at the doctor's office, and he or she says to you, "Sure, I'll prescribe you these pills, but you also need to lose weight, or exercise more, or change your diet, or try meditating, or whatever other lifestyle thing they've decided to throw at you this time." You leave, annoyed, because you don't know where to start, or how that will even help you anyway. If you've ever found yourself in this situation, then listen in as health coach Emily Marquis gives us some tips on the best way to follow doctor's advice this week on Chronically Living. I'm Kelsey Harris, chronic illness warrior and psychotherapist. On Chronically Living and How to Make the Most of It, we're providing tangible ways to improve the well-being of spoonies. So get ready to make the most out of your life, even with that pesky chronic illness.
I'm Emily Marquis. I'm a board-certified clinical health and wellness coach, and I live in southwestern Colorado. I worked in human resources for about a decade and really saw the people as whole. As part of my job, I was in charge of benefits and compensation and recruiting people. As an HR generalist, you're in charge of all of that and then training. And then a hard part of that job is also hard conversations. So employee relations, when someone is not meeting performance expectations or termination. And so I have had lots of those conversations and FMLA and workers' comp. So you really get to see people in vulnerable spots in the workplace, which is not really socially accepted, or at least it wasn't for a long time. And that's when things start coming up, like I'm having this hard challenge in my life. Usually it's health related, or someone in their family is health related, and they are too embarrassed to talk about it, or maybe there's not a culture of it. So really looking at how someone's whole life can impact a job, and I saw that a lot. And I worked through Obamacare, where it was really kind of integrated into the employer's responsibility of good benefits and employee wellness and making sure that your employees are well as part of where they spend most of their time during the week, and then also providing incentives. So I started being able to write plans that incentivize people to feel well. And of course, the ROI is great. If you're treating people well and they're feeling well, turnover goes down, retention goes up, productivity goes up. So just connecting all those dots. And in that same sense, I myself went through some health challenges. So I had fertility challenges and chronic stomach aches, anxiety, depression. I didn't know what was going on. And so went from doctor to doctor to doctor to doctor. My grandmother had lupus. So it's like all this, you know, all these different things in my genes. My other grandmother had celiacs. And so I couldn't get an answer from a doctor. They just kept writing me prescriptions for antidepressants. I'm like, no, something else is going on here. Please help. And so I finally found a doctor that was like, you know what, we're going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to run every blood panel out there. And we're just going to be curious. And so I found out some things and had fertility challenges, thyroid challenges, anxiety. I had PCOS, which is now very common in women. And all of these different things were sort of hitting it at one step. And it's like, okay, you can go on 17 medications forever, or, you know, you can go on some medication and make some lifestyle changes. This can be reversed or managed in a healthy way, complementary. And you have to figure out how to do all of this within your budget and your full-time 60-hour work week. So I felt very alone and isolated in the information I was given and the support system and what I needed to do personally in my life to make those changes. And then obviously when you're making those changes, it peels back an onion of your belief system and support system and values and your time management and your schedule and really what you identify with, which is could be your health or pain. And it's weird. So then there was this profession out there, health and wellness coaching, that supported people in making these changes. I said, oh my gosh, I don't want anyone to go through what I went through, or workers of mine to go through. And so long story, I know that's a long story, but that's really, I couldn't believe there was a profession out there.
Emily felt empathy for the health challenges her employees were going through while she worked in HR, and also has experienced her own health challenges, which motivated her to make a career change. Now, I've had health coaches on the show before, but what exactly is a health coach?
So I got certified in it 10 years ago in 2011, and it still wasn't a thing for a long time. It was sort of like a life coach or an Oprah wannabe to be this health coach, or, you know, people think you're a nutritionist or a personal trainer. So I've been explaining what I've been doing for a long time. And then recently now there's all these studies of how it's sort of the missing link in prevention and also individual lifestyle change, motivational interviewing. And now it's a board certified by the National Medical Examiners as a recognized piece of the healthcare system. So now I'm able to work with people in a clinical way that's recognized in our healthcare system and with employers. So it's a lot of space to explore and dive into the deeper conversation around what are my values and my identities and my beliefs, and do I want to crack that foundation open, or is it already cracked? Do I need to put it back together so that I can make some aligned behaviors within those? So if someone has a chronic condition and they either want to maybe reduce medication, or that's not possible and they just want to have a positive mindset or get to the doctor more often, or, okay, I know I have to exercise more, but I've got small kids, or, you know, I've got a slew of other things going on. So really it's all about this, the science of lifestyle change. So with a health coach, you get space to talk with someone to sort out what's important to you, what's your vision, and then either work with a doctor's recommendations or what you know needs to be done, and set realistic goals that fit individually into your life and your values, with some accountability, some cheerleading, some exploration of what works and what doesn't and why. And that's so really helping you make a sustainable change that's meaningful to you.
So if you listen to my solo episodes as well, you might notice a bit of overlap with things like values. And I'll be doing an episode on committed action, which is behavior change through goal setting. Obviously, there are huge, huge differences between seeing a therapist and a health coach, but I was like, oh, that's really interesting that someone else is using that kind of values-based living idea too. Emily works with a variety of clients who have different chronic illnesses.
My niche is really partnering with people who have chronic illness, which is a slew of things, or with doctors. So if a doctor is recognizing someone is overwhelmed or is having the desire to make a change to support their well-being, but obviously is up against some barriers or just can't make it stick, usually a doctor can refer me. So I work a lot with type 1 diabetes. I work with chronic pain, complementing sleep disorders and anxiety disorders, or it's not, doesn't even have to be a disorder, fibromyalgia, type 2 diabetes, things like that, thyroid issues, Hashimoto's, all those things, and they can be interrelated. So usually I work with people who have doctors as a team of support too.
Okay, so let's go back to that scenario from the beginning of the episode. You go to the doctor, they prescribe you medication and maybe recommend a lifestyle change. Maybe it's exercise or diet, something like that. And sometimes these doctors are too blunt and they just say, like, lose weight or something. And this can be really hard to digest, especially with a chronic illness. You might even have the thought of exercising or losing weight won't actually help me.
I mean, you can have 20 different things that could help you, right? And if someone just says you need to lose weight or you need to start exercising more, that's going to help you. It can feel more like a being told what to do. So it's like, okay, well, that is certainly going to help you, but what else could help you? So having the client decide, okay, well, maybe exercise isn't for me right now, but what could help you? You know, getting out of the bed in the morning a little bit earlier, or getting into a routine, or journaling, or, you know, having a social event with a friend once a week. So like starting out with what they think would be helpful. And then also kind of diving into, let's say a doctor makes a recommendation, which again, like you said, here's your like pills and good luck remembering to take them all when, and here are all the side effects. Now you have to manage those. So yeah, it can be both. So it's really taking the opportunity to sit back and be open. Okay. I can search the internet and there's going to be 7 different opinions on what's going to help me. What do I think I can do? What's important to me? And if a doctor says you should go out and exercise, well, that word can mean like lots of different things to different people. So let's peel back. Okay, let's talk about, well, why wouldn't exercise work for you? Oh, I don't have time. I've tried it before. It's never worked. So start to like understand the barriers and see what other opportunities there might be. For example, exercise doesn't mean you become a yogi who can, you know, put themselves in a pretzel, or you're going to run 5Ks every week. Exercise could mean, you know, putting on a YouTube video and dancing for 15 minutes every day, or walking around your block, or playing with your kids or grandkids. So I think taking away that burn or that sting of some of those words that we identify some negative feelings with, and start to be open with, okay, well, what could work for me that is also going to give me the same benefits instead of that one word that just keeps coming up.
So a bit of reframing of the doctor's vague recommendations can be a good place to start. Emily is right. Using the exercise example, there are so many ways to get exercise that doesn't involve what we normally associate with exercise. Heck, even cleaning counts as light exercise. What makes it hard for us to make some of these lifestyle changes in the first place, though?
We're wired a certain way. So neuroplasticity shows us that our brain is malleable and can be changed up until the day we die. There's science of that. And before, we used to think this is our personality and this is who we are and this is my belief systems, and these generations have created these patterns, which is true. So coming out of those patterns is actually scientifically what is difficult, and it's possible. So it's just, we've been doing the same thing neurologically in our mind, which creates that mindset. And the longer we've been doing it, either in our own lives or been taught generationally, it's just going to be a little bit harder. Like if you were to look at a record, to pick that needle up out of the groove and place it in a new one. So science says it's possible and it's challenging.
Emily is going to take us more deeply into how we are going to make these recommendations made by our doctors into a reality.
This is very important to understand the autonomy and the individuality of the person. I mean, there's cultures. If someone says, if it's clear to me or a doctor, you're like, you need to set boundaries with your family. Like, this is way too stressed out. You can't just have your sister dropping her kids off whenever she wants. You know, that's not going to work for you. It's like, well, this is my culture. You know, we are in this village together. That's off limits. Okay, well, then what would your life look like? Taking a step back and taking space to reflect on what's my vision 1 year from now, and then taking steps backwards. Okay, if 1 year from now, if I were to wave a magic wand, here's what an ideal world would look like. Well, then in 9 months, what's my goal? 6 months, 3 months? And then what are the action steps in between? And so really using strategic, smart goal setting that's realistic, that has some doable action steps in between, with opportunity for adaptability and curiosity and failure of action steps that might not work, or this worked then and it's not going to work now, or this really worked, I'm going to build on that. So building confidence with smart goal setting, and having a support system with either within your current life or your coach, and also having someone on your side to just work through it. And that accountability is also scientifically proven to help. When you have to show up for someone else or something else, then you're more motivated to do it.
There are different ways to go about making changes and having realistic goals, depending on what illness you have. Emily gives us some examples.
It depends on the chronic illness or the autoimmune. So there's some things that don't have options to take breaks from. And that can be working with someone's mindset and also some compassion, really building compassion. And what are your strengths and building upon that? So for type 1 diabetes, you know what? What's the easiest thing that you can do to work within the recommended guidelines so you feel well? Like, starting to really connect with your body. What does feeling well feel like to you? And when do you know in your data or your blood work or anything that what that looks like when you're feeling well? So how you can reach those things. So really have holding that container of empathy and compassion alongside movement forward, even if it's baby steps. Like, okay, you need to bolus your insulin 30 minutes before you eat. Well, you know what? You've got a full life. Let's try 15 this week, 15 minutes on these few days, and then we'll work up to that. So really moving forward with at a pace that is working with that person's life within safety.
I like that Emily mentioned compassion. This is so important. I've mentioned this on the show before, but there have been some recent studies that show self-compassion is an effective intervention for chronic pain. So Emily also mentioned SMART goal setting, which is very important as well. For those of you who are unfamiliar with SMART goals, here's what she means.
I'm sure we've all lived this, and science also tells us that one of the biggest challenges for success is setting unrealistic goals. We all want to do well. And sometimes we can have perfectionism or we're overachievers. We're like, you know what? I'm going to change my life. And next week I'm going to tackle this. I'm going to be perfect every single day. And then life happens and you're like, well, that didn't work out. And you feel defeated and discouraged and then kind of get that. Well, what's the point? I'm overwhelmed. So it's really being realistic. So SMART stands for specific, measurable, attainable or achievable, realistic, and time bound. So really specific. So instead of saying next week, I'm going to cut out soda. Well, are you doing that right now at all? So like, well, let's try 2 days. I'm going to have one soda because right now you're drinking five a day. So on Tuesday and Thursday, I'm only going to have one. And then you see how it goes. And so that's really specific. It's realistic and it's time oriented and you're able to measure it the next week. Like, did it happen or not? And then learn from it. Okay. Well, now I'm going to on Tuesday and Thursday have none, or 3 days next week, I'm only going to have one soda. And then you're building confidence and self-efficacy and you're learning about your behaviors with curiosity too. So that's being really specific with baby steps and then knowing that that's leading to a bigger goal of feeling better or healthy weight loss or just lower blood sugar or inflammation in your body. So having a bigger goal with small, small baby steps to get there.
Specific, measurable, attainable, realistic or relevant, and time bound. What are those inevitable setbacks that we are going to experience when it comes to accomplishing our goals?
And then you build tools along the way because we're going to have setbacks. So like, say you're into this week, month three, and then you have a really bad week. It's like, well, okay, I'm going to build resilience because I know I've done it before and I can either start over or pick up where I left off. I think that is, again, like having compassion instead of beating ourselves up or beating someone else up because they're unable to achieve. That again is very normal. And that is so you can put tools into place to maintain something, but temptations are going to come. So just make your toolbox bigger so that when a setback comes, you can say, okay, I know this has worked for me. I'm going to pull this one out. Or say you do have a curveball in something else in your life. So it's natural that you go back to a tendency that wasn't serving you, or you just don't have the energy to put into it. It's like, okay, well, now you're in this space. Let's adjust what's doable for you and reconnect with how that's going to feel, make you feel well to show up for everything else that's going on.
In this week's Patreon content, Emily tells us how to incorporate pacing for chronic illness into our goal setting. To sign up for exclusive weekly bonus content at only $5 a month, follow the link in the show notes. So does all of this work anyway? What are some of the results Emily has seen with her clients taking this approach to helping them following doctors' recommendations through her health coaching?
So the results I've seen is people, yeah, they just feel well and they have a strong perspective and boundaries on their life around what they prioritize to make sure that their health comes number one. And then it seems like everything else can fall into place because they're feeling well or have enough energy or sleep or movement or medication is going well. So when someone is content, that is the goal, and feeling well and able to shine. I've seen people, if it allows, get off of lots of medication, if that's a goal. I've seen people feel really well because they are adhering to medications. I've worked with people who have bipolar and they're just feeling well because they're on top of their healthcare, which is something that's a lifelong process. And just, I also do group coaching. And so feeling less isolated, where they don't feel like they're going through this totally alone, and having that partner in that is huge. Then doctors, I mean, they want to help their patients in this way. It's just their system is not set up to spend the time or go deep. And sometimes people don't want to uncover certain stories to doctors. So the doctors are so excited too when they see, again, all doctors want their patients to feel well. That's why they went into it, to help people. So when we become a village together as clinicians and patients, it's a beautiful thing.
Good point about the way the healthcare system is set up. I think that doctors truly do go into medicine with the best intentions, but the system itself isn't always designed for them to be able to help patients the best way they can. And this is where all of our other allied healthcare professionals, like the ones I've had on the show, come in. So circling back to the beginning of the episode where Emily told us about her own health issues, I'm wondering how she's doing now.
My health, fortunately, is well. It's actually pretty great, but things happen. So I choose not to drink alcohol. I mean, I have some every once in a while, but that really impacted my sleep and my mood and my energy and all these things in my life. And so that was a big change that I went through. And now I just feel better. And I eat mostly a plant-based diet, which was a huge change for me, but also just helped with my health. I had a lot of inflammation. I do take regular medication for thyroid. So I am on lifelong medication. I see a therapist regularly. And for, I think for over 10 years, we just celebrated 10 years, which is kind of weird to celebrate with your, like, I have a therapist for 10 years. But you know, I go to my doctor, I have a great relationship with them, and I get blood work done. And I do lots of things. So those are all of my tools in my toolbox that I know keep that going well. But I have curveballs. I feel like I'm a very healthy person. And last year I was told that I may have breast cancer. And I went through this huge 3 to 4 month process of figuring that out. Fortunately, everything was okay. But, and then, you know, I think so many women have lesions on their cervix, and I was told I had that. So I don't think anyone is immune from life happening. And so it's like, okay, that's when those tools are really important to pull out. Like, all right, what's going to happen? So fortunately, I'm very healthy, and I hope that stays this way.
Emily has some final advice to depart on us, which I think is worthy sharing.
I think that if you're feeling stuck or overwhelmed, that's totally normal. And I think that that's probably a message to you that you have a desire to feel better and you don't have to do it alone. So there's coaches out there to help. I'm sure there's support groups or someone down the street who might be in a similar situation. So try to de-isolate yourself, which I know is hard in a COVID time, but really trying to build up that support system and be vulnerable and curious and, all right, what can I do to feel well because I deserve it?
Are you ready for our lightning round questions?
Okay, sure.
What are the top 5 songs that describe your life?
Top 5 songs that describe my life. I was thinking about this. That's so hard. I'm a huge music lover. Huge music lover. So I don't know if they describe my life, but there's this version of Shelter from the Storm by Bob Dylan that's live and it's like fast and like rock. That's like one of my all-time favorites. And that I feel like describes some situations in my life. There's this one song that I love. It's a pop song that I listen to with my daughters. Oh my gosh, who is it? But it's like Cry. And it's like every time I cry, I get a little bit stronger. So that one's like a fun like workout or a sad song. Anything Van Morrison. I think he's so articulate in describing emotion, and that's very moving. 3, right? Okay, anything Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and also, let's see, And I'm going to go the other way. Fiona Apple, she's kind of like Van Morrison, where she is very articulate in describing poetically things that I love. So some spectrum there.
Yeah, I like that. Very, very diverse group of songs. That's awesome.
Yes.
What's one thing you can't go a day without doing?
Meditating. It's something I do every day, even if it's for 5 minutes. I notice when I don't. So it's very important to me.
Me too, actually.
Yes.
What's one thing you plan on doing in your life that you haven't yet?
I've been very fortunate, but I would love to have a big, beautiful yard with a garden and of flowers and food and just a beautiful, serene space. And I have a horrible gardening skill. I can't grow anything. So I would love to someday, if I had time, or I would love to learn more about gardening and have a beautiful garden that would make my soul very happy.
Cool. Describe your perfect day.
My perfect day is get up, meditate, journal, have my nice cup of tea before my family wakes up. So I have that quiet space before the crazy sets in. I have 2 young kids, and then get up and have a nice slow morning with them where we eat breakfast together and just chat or tell jokes, and then go outside, go hiking or on the river, do some yoga, and then have friends over for dinner, play some board games and go to bed.
Oh, that sounds great. How do you inspire others to make most of their lives?
I would say I live my life fully, in that I really like to try new things and probably surprise people. Over COVID, I had a friend, or I was like, you know, I really want to learn how to clog, which is like tap dancing, like Appalachia or flatfoot clog style. And I found someone in town. I live in a very small town, and who does it? And I picked it up and I learned how to clog. And my friends were like, what? What are you doing? And I'm like, why not? Why wouldn't I learn this? So I love to just find something I want to do and just give it a try and have fun, because life can be very serious sometimes. So really trying to have fun and then talk about it and celebrate it with other people.
Amazing. Where can we find you and follow you?
My epicenter of contact is on my website. So it's just Emily Marquis, MARQUIS.com. And you can find all things about me there.
Awesome. So I'll definitely make sure to link that in the show notes. Thank you so much for coming on today. This has been wonderful.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Kelsey. Thank you so much.
Following your doctor's advice comes down to a few things. You have to be open to following it in the first place. So if something like medication that you need to follow regularly, hopefully you're already open to doing that. But sometimes with the lifestyle stuff, it's a little different. So opening your mind up to all the smaller options within their advice. Setting SMART goals with baby steps as you make your way to the full goal. And accountability, to whether that's to yourself, your doctor, your health coach, your support friend. You know, I like this. SMART goal setting is something I definitely do with clients and with myself, and it's always, always helpful. So, reflection time. What did you notice about your thoughts and feelings as you listened to Emily today? What are you noticing now about your noticing? Have a great week and keep making the most of it. Special thanks to Mardi for the original music and Charity Williams for the original artwork.